Squadron Leader Jack Steele and the Starblade.
Welcome to Starblade Unsheathed, episode 5. This week we're focusing on music and art. It's a very cultural episode. Joining us tonight are Frank Redding, who is the sound engineer, Bill McSweeney, who played Dr. Brunel and also composed the music for the show.
Oh, really? Good evening.
We were hoping to get Nigel Potter, but he couldn't make it, so instead we have Wayne Bolt, the director, and Chris Bidette, the writer.
Hello!
Hello, once again. First time we've got a round of applause, though. Let's invite these guests back.
Right. Starting off with sound, how did you get involved with the project, Frank?
Well, I'd seen the script floating about here and there. I never really got a good look at it. I was a bit jealous. And then at some point, Chris or Wayne, I can't remember, one of the two approached me and said, can you help us with sound? We need to buy some stuff. We need to sort it out. And I'd never recorded a podcast before, so it seemed like a perfect match.
So did you come in as the direct sound engineer, or were you more of a consultant at the start? What actually involvement did you have?
More of a consultant at first. At first, when we went out to buy the equipment and the software, we looked at what we needed and stuff. I'd had some experience with recording just music.
Yeah, what other kind of sound background do you have?
I've been doing music production for a band I've been playing in with some other friends for many, many years. And basically, we recorded some stuff there, and it was really, really poor. So over a few years, we worked ourselves up, and it got a bit better.
How useful is it being able to work digitally on a computer these days for kind of low-budget productions?
I tell you what, I would not want to be involved with tape recording.
How long were you involved with the project? Did you come back in at the end to check over the results?
Well, the recording went reasonably quick, and in hindsight, I wish I'd sort of put a bit more attention at that, because a lot of things would have been easier to fix at recording stage than later. But once everything was in the can, it actually took quite a long time, probably the longest time. I don't know how long you were writing this stuff, but...
longer than we were editing, has to be said.
Okay, yeah. Well, but the editing was quite a long process. I was coming here and working with Wayne and Chris generally for quite a long time.
It was a few weeks, wasn't it?
It was a few weeks.
I think probably... safe to say 2 or 3 months from when we'd done the recording to when we'd got the final episode ready to go.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Mm. Yeah.
So for series 2, will you be involved again?
Yes.
Yes, I am.
Learned it here first.
Yes.
do you think series 2 will probably be easier and smoother now that you've kind of educated the team as to how to make something like this?
Well, that's always the plan, isn't it? That it doesn't necessarily quite work out like that, but there's certainly a lot of things that we learned, and we know we try to do better. Some people will get the mic in their face, others will be tied down to their chair at a reasonable distance from the mic, that sort of stuff, the usual, you know, sound recording things.
Okay, moving on to another area of the soundscape, which is of course the music. We come to Bill McSweeney, who you've already heard as Dr. Brunel. What came first, being cast as a character or being involved with the music?
Being cast as a character, they were looking for somebody who could do a Scottish accent, and as I used to be a Scotsman, you know, it seemed to work okay. I think many previous attempts had been tried, which resulted in various forms of Urdu. So you know, the fact that I could actually do a Scottish accent, being a Scotsman, was ahead of the game, really. You know, so
I can do a Scottish accent, but only if I'm doing Gimli lines.
Me too.
You'll have to toss me.
Talking of accents, though, we did have one of our more eagle-eared listeners complain about the Welsh accent, which a certain Mr. Mike Jones performed. So thanks, Ian.
Bill, what kind of musical background do you have?
Some form of classical training as a small boy, and I was involved for about 3 or 4 years with a group in the 70s who had a contract with 20th Century Fox, and we sold huge numbers of records, which is why I'm reduced to doing this now. No, I'm sorry, I didn't reduce. No. It was some involvement with the music industry, recording and playing and writing.
So much that you went to Wayne and Chris with the idea in the first place of incorporating some of your music?
Well, yeah, I mean, you were going to do music, weren't you? I mean, at one stage, I'm talking to Chris now for the benefit of those without colour television, you know.
Yes.
A lot of radio programmes are always quite known by their music. If you have a distinctive music, imagine Doctor Who without the title music, you know.
How do you go about actually creating and recording the music?
It's a bit like writing songs for me. They come out of the ether. But with this, it was perhaps a little more definitive. I mean, you're trying to capture a mood. What's it about, you know? I was thinking, this is way before anybody around this table can remember the programme Journey into Space, which is way back to my childhood, you know, in 1812. And then maybe thinking about Dan Dare and then coming up to date, Doctor Who, that kind of mood. So it was about creating the mood. And then Chris and Wayne, the producers, saying, well, that's okay or that's not. I sent a couple of samples to you and it was thumbs down and thumbs up, you know.
What about the Jack Steele song, which we'll be hearing at the end of this podcast? How did you come up with that?
Well, that was written in a fit of inspiration when the launch party was coming on. I just thought something like that would be fun for the evening. It was really written just for that evening.
Was it something that Chris and Wayne knew you were doing?
No, I just turned up on the launch party night, I think, didn't I? Presented you with a CD, and it was either used as a coffee coaster or it was played, you know, those were the choices, you know. And it seemed to catch on. It's an irritatingly catchy tune.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well. I hate the damn thing already. But it's fun.
Is there any way we can hear any of your other music created over the years?
Wow, that's, yeah. Hmm. Well, 20th Century Records have closed. I'll tell you a small story, and you can edit it, can't you? You know, but when we first signed to 20th Century Records, they just opened a record division. They were a film company, are still a film company, I think. And they signed two acts up in their first year, who were us and Barry White, a large black gentleman who made a fortune. And I didn't. But anyway, yeah, we got a contract. We were managed by a guy called Don Black, who wrote lyrics for Diamonds Are Forever, John Barry, Born Free, got an Oscar for that one, lots of other things. So it was quite an interesting time, and so we did two albums, and we got an offer of a third, but the other two guys in the band decided to travel the world, and I had a year-old daughter and decided I'd rather see more of her, so that was the demise of Willow. But for your interest, 30-odd years later, is it? The two other guys are in North Carolina and New Hampshire, and we've started writing and recording again.
That'd be
fun. You know, from the same different name. Parts of the world. Same name. I mean, it's same terrible stuff, you know, but it's fun. It's fun, though. You know, it doesn't really matter. You know, so.
More to come, then.
More to come, yeah.
Right, if we move on to talking about the artwork now, despite the fact we don't have either of the artists actually here.
Yeah.
Why did you get artists involved with the radio play?
Initially, it was to come up with some art so that the actors could have a vague idea as to what the character they were playing looked like.
Then when Ben came up with the original sort of comic-based concepts of the good guys, we went with those for the style of the website, and Nigel's more photorealistic bad guy artwork we've kept on there as well. So it's two very different styles which both seem to capture the characters in question very well, I think, anyway.
Our original plan was to juxtapose the two styles of artwork, so we would have Nigel's photographic and darker style as the backdrops and use Ben's very cartoony characters, but we never managed to get the two to meet.
No, Ben living in Hull and Nigel living in Norwich, it was a bit tricky. And despite the wonders of the internet, we didn't actually get that far.
Nigel was also involved as Mordred, of course.
Yes.
Which came first, again? Was it playing him playing Mordred or being involved?
Oh, Nigel doing the artwork came first, definitely. He's a very talented artist, and as we've been doing, if everyone we know has got a vague bit of talent, we've been leeching it as much as we can. And
I'm sure there's an official word for leeching.
We'll look up on the internet.
Utilising the talents of everyone we know as much as we can.
Nigel was definitely in for the artwork first, and then he just sort of stumbled into the Mordred role. We couldn't find anyone else, and he had a suitably
villainous.
Well, I didn't know he had that villainous voice actually until I don't know whether you'd heard him after perhaps wanting to make cigarettes.
No, it's the more just sort of like dismissive nature of him all, and he just really can't be bothered. You know, if you've ever been
Alan Rickman's the word you're looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're saying it's more his character than his voice?
Well, I think it was his time as working in Odbins, which is now sadly shut.
Oh, yes, he commented on that last week in last week's podcast.
How much creative freedom did you give the artists? Did you just let them get on with it, or did you give them firm directions as to what the characters should look like?
Well, we gave them the initial specs as to what he wanted for the artwork. Ben did for the website. Chris and myself chose a particular scene from each of the episodes and just asked Ben to come up with that.
But the character descriptions were things like Yvette is
French.
Well, French.
Full stop.
But limited guidance, I think. Literally, just, you know, dark-haired, slim.
We gave him just a couple of lines description of each of the characters that we wanted him to do, and pretty much let him get on with it.
How long did it take the artists to come up with the final pieces? Was it pretty much the first thing they gave you is what is ended up on the website?
Yep. Yeah. There haven't been any rejections to the artwork at all, as far as
we're concerned. Beggars can't be choosers.
Well, that is one way of putting it, but no, the artwork has been spot on in both cases.
Where can we see more work by Ben and Nigel?
Well, Nigel, we're going to be hosting some of his artwork on the It's a Trap site, which will be shadowofravens.itsatrap.co.uk. And for Ben, look at the It's a Trap site for the It's a Trap logo, which is all his own work. Links should be available on the website.
And now, playing for the first time ever, we have the Jack Steele song.
Squad leader Jack Steele, he has no Achilles heel. He should be number 10 today. With Merlin, Dulac, and Brunel, he'll save us all from going to hell. We'll all live to see another day. The crew of Starblade ready up their guns, they're prepared to give their lives. Then they'll shout, what fun, oh what fun. Squadron leader Jack Steele, a decent chap who keeps it real, taking care of business in the sky. He inspires blind loyalty, a giant in both space and sea, remains our sole defender till he dies. The crew of Starblade ready, up their guns, they're prepared to give their lives. Then they'll shout, what fun, oh what fun. Mordred and Gregor Rasputin, Helga is so highfalutin, a German with a sternum to adore. Mansell Dulac is treasure deal, she's in love with Monsieur Steele, he simply doesn't notice what a bore. Sterling's got a pound on winning, the zombies have stopped their rictus grinning, one mighty whack from Jack, they're on the floor. The crew of Starblade ready, up their guns, they're prepared to give their lives, then they'll shout, what fun, oh what fun. Squadron leader Jack Steele hasn't had a decent meal since Bilkins burned the beans in 32. Eyes of steel and jaw of granite, he's not just here to save the planet, but that's precisely what he's going to do. The crew of Starblade ready, up their guns, they're prepared to give their lives, then they'll shout, what fun, oh what fun. Squadron leader Jack Steele, he has no Achilles heel. He should be number 10. He should be number 10. He should be in number 10 today.
So that may well be available as a download
once we've sorted out the contractual arrangements with Bill.
Who is it, 20th Century Records we need to speak to? Or
No, I'm contractually free from them. Since about 1973.
Thank you for listening to Starblade Unsheathed, Episode 5. Ching. We'll be back next week. And thank you to everyone that could come, Bill and Frank.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. And Wayne and Chris, but they're always here anyway.
We are always here.
We are always here, yeah.
But thanks anyway.
And a big thanks to Karen, who was sitting here.
Really?
Very politely.
And again, as a welcome return to Simon Jones asking the questions for us.
So until maybe next week, goodbye!
Goodbye.
Maybe next week.
Yeah.